tons of guns, everybody's getting strapped. Tons of guns, gotta watch the way you act. Tons of guns, real easy to get. Tons of guns, bringing nothing but death. Tons of guns are in the streets nowadays. It's big money, and you know crime pays.
There was a point Leisha made that I want to move the conversation towards, but not yet. But I do want to take it to another place really quick, because a lot of the commentary that's also been coming out about black and white people is everybody's opinion about President Obama's response to this, where he just happened to be when this situation jumped off. And I don't know. I don't envy that man, not one single second of my life in regard to his experience. There has been for me moments of frustration where I want him to be that black militant president that kicks in the door and is like, this is some bullshit. Y'all got to get it together. And, you know, I could die holding my breath waiting for that moment. You know what I mean? I really could. But I don't envy him. You know, the whole situation that happened this week with the journalist that was beheaded by ISIS, all the things that he has to balance in his head. I just don't envy the man at all. But I'm curious as to everybody's perspective of his response. Did you expect him to respond differently? What did you expect in regards to how he responded or his, you know, just the entire situation when it comes to Obama? And where is Michelle?
Well, to be honest, I mean, I'm probably the White House raising her kids.
She's like, grandma, I'm out of this.
Ms. Robinson. But, you know, it's my auntie, South Carolina.
Oh.
But, not really in my mind.
Oh.
But if I go to the White House, that's my auntie.
Right. Okay.
But as far as, like, the president's response, I guess I have a serious issue with how he addresses black issues.
Okay.
I've noticed that whenever he's addressing, like, the gay issue or, like, Israel or Latinos and immigration, he's very, very forceful and aggressive. But when it's an issue addressing us, you know, it's very, I'll say, passive. Like, if you saw the speech that he did addressing Ferguson, and then the very next day, the speech that he did addressing ISIS, like, he was clearly angry and, you know, he was, like, ready to fight, ready to start the war and drop bombs on people. But when this young man is killed, he was kind of like, he had our back to a degree, but at the same time, he still went to that same diatribe about, you know, about black crime and blah, blah, blah. It's always like this, I don't know, it's like a tongue-in-cheek comment that he'll have. Or even, I remember when he ran for office, when he did an interview with BET, when, like, black commentators would ask him about issues in the race relations or, like, reparations. He was almost, like, angry. And his response was always kind of smart, and I just feel like the way he talks to us is just not really constructive. And it just goes to show that we're not really past, I guess I would say, the post-racial era or whatever. We're just not there. So I guess personally, I'm not happy with the way that he addresses our issues and, you know, works for us. So,
I mean, I'm not happy in the sense like, yes, this is exactly what I would want from my black president, but whatsoever. But I also tend to be a little more understanding with the situation that he's in than I've been criticized for, let's put it that way, of being understanding. Only because I do think that politics is number one, unfortunately. And I think that when you're in politics, you have to be political, and it's not politically popular to, like, make certain statements. I mean, and I'm literally basing this, and I'm not saying that that justifies it, but I mean, I just see the response that people, like I was saying on Facebook, I mean, white people are that get so offended that black people are saying that there's racism. And I'm like, what? That's offensive to you? Like, I just can't even fathom. So I can't even imagine if Obama went on a national platform and made a statement, like, the response would be, and I'm not saying that he shouldn't. I would love it if he did. But I'm realistic that I don't see that happening, and I get why he doesn't feel. It's sort of like, and the only thing I can compare it to is I've pretty much consistently worked at majority white offices or companies. And it's sort of like when you're like the first black person and then like you don't want to hire the next person you hire can't be a black person. I mean, it's sad to be saying that, but it's just the office policy. Like all of a sudden, like, oh, one black person. Oh, then they bring another black person. Then all of a sudden you're taking over the office to the white people. And it's sad that we have that mentality, yeah. But it's just, that's how it is a lot of times. And I think that perception of like Obama, black guy, he brings in his black attorney general and now they're just taking over the country and they're only working for the black people. And we know that that's not even close to the case, but it's just
that's
that perception.
That's how people talk, though.
Yeah, that perception is real.
Yeah.
So, and the only thing that I'm disappointed most of all is that it is his second term. But unfortunately, we do have an election coming up, and I do think that is a huge factor. If it was after the election in November, then I might be like, okay, dude, you have literally nothing to lose at this point. But who knows, you know? But that's not the case. There is a very extremely important election yeah. in November. Extremely important. And yeah. so if this is what he feels he has to do to keep some Democrats in office, then unfortunately I have to suck it up and deal with it because I do think that is a very important goal.
And see, somebody mentioned to me at some point in his presidency, somebody was, it was a Mike Brown-ish type situation. I don't know if it was Trayvon Martin or somebody before him, but Obama came out kind of forcefully in regards to his opinion about it. And I know with Trayvon, he made the statement of how this could be his son and that the hell he caught from that.
Oh, the brother from Boston who was like arrested for breaking into his own house.
That was Henry Louis Gates.
Yeah,
that's what it was.
Yeah. He went off. He was like, what the fuck is wrong with y'all?
Stupidly, how can you wreck into your own house?
Right. And he took a lot of heat for that.
Yeah. And I think there's an
officer that ended up coming to the White House having a beer.
Summit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think there's a PR angle to it now. I think somebody has just been like, you can't say anything.
Right. He got an Olivia Pope like, right there, like, no. And I agree with, I agree with Leisha. And especially when it comes to like this past week, okay, Mike Brown happened, but he can be forceful when it comes to an American being killed in Syria right. because it's an American. Right. So everybody's looking like, yep, that's what he's supposed to do. That's his role, right? So you can't really, it's hard to compare those two because it's an American and then it's a black American, which is a little different. Which is
but that's
a lot
a shame.
Different.
That's a shame.
But I don't know.
A black American should be
American
on American soil.
But within American within just the American continental American politics, a black American should be equally as American as any other American, Latino, white.
I get that part. But I'm saying when he's talking to America. That was America against ISIS in Syria, as opposed to, you know, an American against an American, right? This American police officer in this esteemed position as a police officer killed him. So it's a little different. But and I get it. It is a game. Politics is a game. He has to play it. Yeah. Unfortunately.
And I think Michelle's not on the scene because I don't think she could control herself if she started to. That's my thing. She's like, you know what? I'm going to need to sit this one out and be quiet because if I address this topic on a national stage and somebody asks me a question that I would be like, you stupid. I just think so. She's like, yo, restraint is best here.
Yeah. And I think Carmen's point is also really valid. It's very easy to criticize Muslim terrorists. There's not too many people that are too offended when you say something against Muslim terrorists. But when you start criticizing the police, then you start to deal with some strong reactions. And I'm just going to give a little personal anecdote is that I served on a jury and our case involved a police officer and it was the California Highway Patrol and it was a racial discrimination case. And there was two women that in the jury, I mean, we had a very interesting jury situation, but there were two women that would not find against the cop for anything, just no matter what. I mean, there was just like, they thought that, you know, everything, there was a reason for everything and everything made sense. And this case was not blatant by any means. But it was just interesting to me because there are people that no matter what will never really criticize a police officer or think that they're in the wrong. And out of anything that comes out of this, I do think that the most progress that we may make is some sort of police action. And I don't know if it's going to end up being, whether it's the law that they were trying to pass with the demilitarization of it, the police, but just moving forward, my focus is on like realistic policy changes. It's not on, I'm over changing minds. No offense. I'm just like,
well, this is our own minds.
Yeah. Like I can't change black people's minds. I can't change white people's minds. But when we have laws that are in place, those laws can affect change because they don't give you a choice. It's sort of like when you go to rehab, like you can't do drugs because there are no drugs there. It's not that you are cured. You just physically can't. Obviously, you can obtain them, but I'm saying the way it's supposed to work is the idea is you are cut off. You're physically cut off. It's not. And I mean, then you try to work on the mental, but when that physical part isn't there, you don't have a choice. You can't do a drug if you can't access it. You know what I mean? So my point is that with cops, my thing is forget changing their minds. Put cameras on every single one. Yes. Record every single thing they do. Force them to tell on themselves or... I don't care. Then let's find out who wants to break the cameras. You know what I mean? Like, let's get it started. Like, who is going to fight this process? Who has something to hide? And we need to start with things like that. And I was also very encouraged to see the voting registration effort in Ferguson because supposedly only 12% vote. And that's another thing that can have a literal direct effect immediately. Like, vote these people out of office. I mean, hello? Like... And I mean, those are two things that to me, I would like to focus on for the future.
And that goes to changing the minds.
Exactly. Yeah. Solutions, real solutions, not let's have therapy and change the cops' mentality. No, they are who they are. Right. These like, and that's what I'm saying. Even like the mentality in the world, right, or in America, I should say, with race, you know, we're descendants from slaves. And a lot of white people that, especially in the South, are descended from slave owners. I mean, that's who their ancestors are, you know, and we don't think about like that's their legacy that they carry. And this is past just like, you know, mentalities. I mean, this is like ingrained and it's not something that I personally feel is going to change anytime soon unless you force people to deal with it. You know? Yeah. You have to force it.
Now, I was going to ask about everybody's thoughts about, you know, how you shrink this divide between the cops and, you know, and the community. As far as Barack, yeah, they're not going to let him say too much. He's had moments where he's tried to come out and speak up for the injustice that black people deal with in this country. He's tried to be like, look, white America, let me try to explain to you why some black people might feel some kind of way about these things. And he takes flack for it. And, you know, like you said, he has to play the game. It would help if the people he stands up for, meaning black people, had enough power to where we could make a difference politically and voting wise where, you know, other people, he doesn't want to piss them people off because they can vote him out. And they're trying to kick him out now.
Right.
They're trying to like, well, we don't want you to finish 8 years. We want to get you out in 6. You're like, hey, why don't you let the brother finish? You know, and this whole thing of, well, he's on vacation. I'm like, Syria, Ferguson, Iraq, all of this. I mean, it's like a lot on his plate. And you're like, okay, do something. And it's like, really?
And they said out of all the, I guess the last 2 or 3 presidents, he has had less days away from the White House than any of them.
Mm. Yeah, it's.
He's never really on vacation.
No. Yeah. I mean,
he has like a laptop where he's at. So it's not like right. He's not, like, but at the same time, he did sign up for that. So, I mean, though he has all these other issues, he addresses those issues too. So he can eloquently address our concerns as well. Yeah. Now, I want to say, like, as far as black people and our power, I mean, just being 13% of the population, we actually have a lot of power. Mm-hmm. Whether it's consumers, even voters, because per capita, we voted more than white people in the last election. Like, we actually got him elected. And as far as I'm concerned, that's a lot of political capital.
That is a lot of political capital.
I want him to address some of my issues. I mean, some way or somehow, I'm just kind of tired of the little, like, the half-assed commentary that he has. And the fact that he has 2 years left, like, okay, get over it.
Right.
So I guess we as a community have to hold him accountable. And like you were saying, like, changing minds. We have to change our own minds and understand our power. And then go from there.
The problem is that I think black people, you know, we don't have many options politically, so they kind of know that. So it's either vote for the Democrats or vote for racist Republicans who don't want us to have the time to vote for them anyway. So it kind of leaves us with no choice. And given that there isn't a lot of sway because we're not going anywhere. And I mean, that's partly why the Hispanics have gotten the whole immigration thing, is because they have gone between the two parties. And so the Republicans think there is that little chance of winning over some of them, but they don't think that with black people, you know. They know that
done with this.
Yeah, they know we're not voting for them, and the Democrats know we are voting for them. So we're kind of stuck a little bit with what our political capital is. And what we could do is just vote like better Democrats in and work there, like,
or work with other groups and start another party.
Yeah,
it's not really realistic at the moment. But I mean,
the problem is then we end up with a Republican if we do that. That's the problem. Yeah, and that's why we're stuck. I mean, it's like we literally are stuck. Yeah. So
in Mississippi, apparently they were okay with ending up with the Republican versus the Tea Party option.
Well, yeah, which that's a questionable decision, I've got to say, but I understand the thinking. I do.
One thing that has come up really huge with this Ferguson issue is the militarization of the police force. I know it's picked up a lot. I know when 9/11 happened, it really picked up, and you know, you got situations like the Boston bombing and a white dude in Chicago, you know, shooting up the theater. So, and I've heard somewhere that there's some program with the Pentagon where all these extra weapons from the military are sent down to state and local police, and it seems to just be picking up. I know people don't seem to have an issue with that. We in this country feel like I'd rather have a gun than not. If something happens and we don't have the weapons, give me the weapons. But if we use the weapons incorrectly or overuse them, nobody's like, hey, maybe we need to take the guns away from you. No, you can't do that. I need the weapons here. You know, even since joint we're in Compton. You know, they're trying to arm schools now.
That was the new thing this week.
Yeah.
Compton Unified adopted using assault rifles, having the school police carry assault rifles, and the rest of the school districts in L.A. County are in line to adopt the exact same measure, and they're blaming Sandy Hook for it.
And listen, what really disturbs me is that the initiative for more weapons, whether it be in civilians who can have assault rifles, semi-automatic, whether it's for the military having a surplus of weaponry that, or a grant or a system where they can give monies to local municipalities for militia type weapons and tanks, is that we don't realize we've been had by a lobby, by the weapons manufacturers. Like, they make money. Like, so they are a real force to reckon with. And we don't get these laws. We don't get these monies for the Department of Defense so that they can give these grants to local municipalities for these type of assault weapons by accident, so they can train people in SWAT tactics, you know, between the war, you know, with the war on drugs and with wars, you know, rifles manufacturers saw a big opportunity. Oh, we can sell more weapons, and oh, we live in a dangerous world and we need more weapons. Oh, and the cop killers have assault rifles. And so you need something to protect yourself from their weapons. You need a stronger tank. And so I just wish we were really more up to speed on how this came about through our system of petitioning and lobbying. Because I think we think it's just the natural evolution due to the way the crime has happened and where we are in our world. Like, no, this is a concerted effort by a well-funded, well-organized, and intelligent weapons manufacturing lobby.
No. The way it's going on now, I would invest in these companies. Because I'm like, wow, you are really making weapons. Not all the cops going to have weapons. Some serious automatic. I need to invest in y'all because clearly y'all coming out on top and making a gang of money because folks keep wanting to buy weapons. I mean, shit, selling them at Walmart. I had that black dude who got shot in Walmart with a damn. He wasn't even real. He's like,
Someone wrote a really good article about that black guy in Walmart with the BB gun and him getting shot. Was he killed?
I didn't think it was a BB gun. It was a toy gun.
It was a toy gun in Walmart. But they're like, there's nothing that was justifiable about that because Ohio is an open carry state. And as long as you are showing and brandishing your weapon, you're justified to be allowed to have it. And even with assault rifles. And so someone shooting him because he has a rifle in his hand is antithetical to those who push for the open carry law to begin with. So I just thought, it's just because a black man or black boy, he was a young guy too, was carrying that.
I think I apologize for some of the defense talk, but I think what you see, it's amazing the cycle, I guess, of how one thing, or I guess maybe domino effect would be the better metaphor of how one thing affects the other. So we have this like bloated defense department, and then they have as Bill Maher refers to it, it's basically a jobs program. You know, there's this amount of money that has to be spent every single year. Otherwise people don't have jobs. I personally don't care myself, but you know, that is a reason. And so you end up with we go to war, which it was all part of helping to fund these people and keeping them you need a war in order for them to work, in order for them to have something to do. And then you end up with all these extra tanks and crap that nobody has any need for anymore. But because we have this crazy defense department, it's like these things have to have been made. So let's give them to the police and then we can terrorize the citizens. It's like amazing the way that it just trickles down into everyday, just what exactly happened is the result. I mean, this is the result of these policies.
War is big money. And even the war on drugs, the people, I mean, when you think about that, I don't know what the Arizona law that allowed them to pull over Latinos I mean, that was basically the prison lobby who was our population is dwindling, or we don't project that we'll see enough people in the prison, so why don't we write a law to find a way to imprison more people. Latinos are easy targets because we're going to say we're doing it on the auspices of getting illegal immigrants away. I mean, there's certain businesses that we should not be encouraging. Mm-hmm. Period.
Or shouldn't be privatized.
Yeah, privatized.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. Any incentive to make money shouldn't be connected with prison. Because we all know how you make money.
Sorry. I want to move the conversation back to a point Leisha made early on in regards to some of the critique and commentary that's been coming out, specifically from our people, but from it itches, I think, all of us in an uncomfortable way when we hear it from our people, but that other people have been using too, and that's the comparison of black on black crime to this situation. That annoys me to no end for the exact same reason Leisha brought up, is that it has no bearing on what we're talking about right now. You know, both situations need to be addressed, yes. And the point that I made earlier about us being policing our own communities, I think one of the issues that we deal with right now is that we have a generation of elders that's fearful of the youth versus it being the other way around. I feel like the youth have a certain amount of power of intimidation over the elders. And as where once upon a time you would have a elder pull up and say to a young person, you know, pull your pants up or stop smoking on this corner, or you at least know the kid's name because you know his family or her family and you felt comfortable saying something and putting a little verbal discipline out there. We don't have a whole lot of that happening anymore because you got a lot of young folks doing ignorant stuff to old people, antagonizing them. And I don't think it's just I know it's not just happening in our community. It's just happening with this particular generation. And the fact that we don't have that kind of community situation happening is one of the issues why we deal with the black on black crime the way that we do deal with it. But it's a completely separate point from what we're dealing with now. And it bothers me when people say, how can we get mad when other people kill us, when we kill ourselves? It just absolutely has no bearing on this. I struggle to understand how people make that connection in this situation, as if somehow that justifies all of these men that have been murdered within the last 60 days. It just baffles the freaking mind.
I just want to play devil's advocate, and I don't mean to be base about this, but when you think about what you just said, and you think about how white people look in from the outside with pop culture and say, well, you call each other the N-word. Mm-hmm. Why can't I call you the N-word? Mm-hmm. Do you understand the correlation with that? I mean, it's messed up, but it's still
a life. Yeah, it's a life.
This is what they're doing, though. They're breaking it down. They're breaking the psychology to be equivalent to that. I mean, it's messed up, but it's true. It's true. I have people on my timeline on Facebook. One guy, shout out Sean Cruz, who's like, with the whole situation with Mike Brown. So we need to wait for the facts. What makes you think that this brother, if he's strong arming this guy in the store, what makes you think he didn't go for his gun? I'm supposed to side with him just because I'm black? And there's some people who like, well, what? I know where I stand. I'm just playing devil's advocate so that we can address the big picture, because this is what other people on the outside are saying.
And
this is what they're thinking.
That, like, I guess I've involved, you know, from that perspective, as far as like the black on black crime issue, and then like, you know, the death of black people. Because I remember in the Trayvon Martin, you know, incident, I kind of did have an issue, because at the same time, we do have a very reactive response when we are killed or brutalized. But at the same time, it's happening in, like, you know, pandemic proportions in our own community. But I guess I felt like we're asking for validation from white people, you know, for our own personal lives. It only matters if we're killed by somebody white, we'll go out there and riot and cry and make a shirt and, you know, inform the whole community about how we feel. But when we kill ourselves, it's like, whatever, you know, stop snitching. But at the same time, so I guess when it's used like that, I guess I could understand it, unless you're trying to justify the murder of black men, you know, which is what a lot of them are doing, because truly they don't care about us. And that's my issue.
I think to Jamie's point, which is a really good point, because I actually do agree with that N-word analysis. I do think that it's that if black people use it, and besides using it, it's one thing to use it, but to put it in music and the world in the way that we do, like we are the biggest proponents of the word, it feels like to me. I do think that it's a little hypocritical than to be shocked when other people use the word. But in these circumstances, why I think it's a different situation is because not only is it, it's not as much, I mean, the race is a factor, obviously, it's huge. But like, for example, with Trayvon Martin, like what I was beyond outraged more so than the norm, he didn't get arrested. And I mean, the thing is, we want justice, you know what I mean? Regardless of who kills who, then there should be a consequence. And it's clearly obvious who has a consequence to killing us and who doesn't. Black people do go to jail for killing black people all the time. And when a black person kills a black person, they get arrested on the spot. No way in a million years would, if George Zimmerman was black, he would be dead, honestly. If the police showed up and there was a dead kid, probably, I mean, they probably would have shot him and he had a gun, but he didn't. And I think that's why people get, at least I know for me, it's the justice factor also. Like, I feel like the police have no problem arresting black people for killing, but they do have a problem arresting white people when they kill black people. I mean, it's just a different response, and that is where it comes from.
Brown, it was a police officer, and I think we were just as mad when those officers killed Amadou Diallo, who some of them were black. We were just as upset because it was a police officer, and we expect them to come in with a level of skill that they don't come with. They come with the rogue, like those, if black on black crime is two ignorant people and one of them dies, then we can't, it's not the same as when a cop comes and he's supposed to be putting some order in place, in my opinion. It's not the same at all.
Right, and it goes back to Tasha's point about holding these people at a higher standard. Not saying that we shouldn't hold ourselves accountable or hold ourselves at a higher standard, but when you're dealing with somebody who is an officer of the law, the expectation is that they are coming in with skill. Mm-hmm. They're coming in to diffuse the situation, not make it worse.
Right.
And in this situation, each situation on top of the other is just inciting more and more chaos. Yeah. And that for me is the problem. Yeah. Although I do acknowledge your point, definitely is valid.
For sure.
I just think that specifically with the black on black crime, like, I think people forget that that goes straight back to slavery. That goes straight back to house nigga versus field nigga. It is the exact same thing. Nigga, don't act like that and the police won't come after you. Nigga, don't dress like that and they won't come after you. The white man will, you know what I'm saying? It's, that is exactly what it is, and that is what causes a divide. We can't come together and say, police, make a change, because we're not united. We're so divided. There are light-skinned people who still feel like they're better than dark-skinned people. There are educated people who feel like they don't want to be associated with, you know, a person who may not sound as smart or who may not look a certain way. And that is really what is causing black people to not really be solution-oriented, you know? I mean, quite frankly, there are a ton of black people who, God bless Al Sharpton, they would never, because they can't stand, you know, whatever he represents. I mean, there's just so many divides.
He made a little term, but yeah.
Back, you know what I mean? Like, there's so many.
Yeah, he has turned around a little bit.
I'm trying, right? But I'm just saying, like, there's such a divide in the black community that goes so deep. Even within families, it goes so deep that when something like this happens, there are black people who, from the sincerest part of their heart, they really don't understand why he was out there grabbing a pack of cigars or whatever. They really think that that put him in a position where he deserved. And they know they can't say he deserves, so they'll say, well, what about? But in their sincerest part of their heart, they think that he may have, because if he hadn't done that, the police wouldn't have bothered him.
The black-on-black crime argument that people make is clearly made to deflect from the real issue at hand. But with Ferguson, I will say that you guys should equip yourself with the facts, because Ferguson is 67% black. And in the last year, since the execution murder of Michael Brown, not one black person has been killed by another black person. Since in all of this year.
Yeah, I've read that.
So, like, if black on black crime, it might be an issue for elsewhere, but in Ferguson, that's not an issue. Right. And Alicia's point was so good that, you know what? Even if it is black on black crime, we have faith that the person who killed the other person will get arrested,
right,
and will be tried in some way. But we don't have that same faith when the person perpetrating the crime doesn't look like us.
Right. Yeah, nor does it justify or excuse that black on black crime behavior. So because black people kill other black people, then it's perfectly okay if other people kill
white people kill white people. Yeah. And Asian people kill Asian people. I mean,
white on white crime is actually much higher than black on black crime is.
Yeah. No, I read that piece. Somebody put this article out that, you know, it white on white crime happens a lot. And like 90% of white people who are murdered are killed by white white people. Yeah. So I'm always like, why are you
at the club?
Right.
Right.
You know, we kill each other.
Right.
That's how it works.
Yeah. It's always that perception.
Yeah.
Exactly. Your passion. Yeah. Most crimes are crimes of passion. Yeah. You're not just killing strangers. It's, like, people do, but I mean,
I guess it's likely, used to what? Yeah. Like it's used to diffuse the passion that we have. The, like, when we get. When we get galvanized and we're passionate and we protest about a certain injustice, it's used to diffuse it. Well, you guys aren't really serious about this issue because black folks are, you know, killing each other more than, you know, these people outside of your community are killing you. And so it really diminishes our sense for justice. And,
yes.
You know, and people who use it, I'm not entirely sure that they understand it. It sounds like a really good fact. Like, yeah, how can they get mad about this murder when other murders are happening in their community at far greater rates than, that aren't perpetrated by, yeah. And so I think it's incumbent upon us when we hear it to just, like, without any emotion, to really just address, like, no, that's not the issue.
Right. Yeah. It's a different topic. It is something that does need to be discussed, for sure. I guess people feel like because of all the crimes we commit against each other, and, you know, it don't matter where the hell you at, if it was all black people in the world, we'd still be going at each other because that's just what humans do. Humans are going to fight whoever the hell is around them. And It doesn't matter. White folk do it all the damn time.
Right.
There's that thing that, like, well, if you didn't commit as much crime, then maybe you wouldn't be targeted as much. And I'm like, when they showed the videos of all these footage of Ferguson, you're like, is this the 1960s? Yeah. It's the same shit. And you all, in the 1960s, they was wearing suits. They wasn't getting holes with, you know, with their pants down to their ass. They was wearing suits. In nice clothes, and they was getting hoes and dogs attacked. So it's not like, oh, well, if I pull my pants up, maybe police won't shoot me. They don't give a fuck.
No.
They just like, you black.
To the point where that should have no bearing on the circumstance. Like the whole situation with Trayvon and the hoodie and how all of a sudden that became a symbol for a lot of us. You know, that should have no bearing on anybody's response to you. Why are you judged for that?
And the thing with the thing with the hoodie.
Right. Right.
And the thing with the hoodie is looked at as, you know, an outfit for crime, period. It's not a black thing.
No.
I heard over like in the UK, it was a big deal of kids walking around. And it wasn't just black kids. It was just
kids
walking around with hoodies. It gives a description. I mean, you see all the damn time they show white boys in hoodies. You like, I'm scared. Because he looked like he about to do some shit.
I wear a hoodie when it's cold. Like, my jacket has a hoodie.
Right. Like in the Midwest, it's not a problem. People wear hoodies all the time because it's freaking cold.
It's cold.
Like, it's not. Everybody's not looked at as a criminal. I mean, I lived in Chicago where it was weak. Hoodies were used for that. Now, in L.A., it may be a little different. But the philosophy, I mean, I don't know. Like, if it's cold, people wear hoodies and that's just what it is.
But now.
Skull caps and everything.
Right.
I mean, that's just. You know.
We just now have a costume that can be, you know, defined for who's a thug and who's
not respectable.
Exactly. And, you know.
Another excuse to be
It's blaming the victim.
Exactly. Well,
I said that, but if Obama was walking down the street of Ferguson, he probably would have got shot too.
Right.
But, I mean, if he took a cigarillo or jaywalked.
Right.
I mean, I actually think this is a really important opportunity to sort of, like, come to the defense of this smear campaign in a really, really strong way, because it just feels like when people, and this is what upsets me so much about the reaction, like I said, from black people, because when we buy into that, it's sort of like seeing the difference between, like, oh, the good kids, the bad kids.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem is, like, the police have proven over and over, like, they don't make that distinction. A good kid, bad kid, if you're black, it's all one and the same. I mean, they even said, I literally heard on MSNBC the police being interviewed and saying it's very difficult to tell who are the protesters that are here for, like, peace and who are the ones who are here for trouble. And I'm like, really? It's that difficult to tell the difference between the two? Why is that so difficult? Oh, because they look the same to you. That's why, you know? And the police, when they view us in that way, that there is no difference, then when black people decide to see the difference, well, guess who's putting us at a disadvantage then?
Right.
Us.
Yeah. Right.
Not them.
Right.
We are putting ourselves at a disadvantage by seeing that difference. We should defend as vigorously the bad kid that gets shot, the criminal. Like, we should be defending everyone, you know? And the point is, when you don't, then when it does happen to the good kid, then you're pissed off. But it's like, well, gee, why'd they think they could get away with that?
Right.
That's why, you know? And this is an opportunity to me. I mean, we've already dealt with it with Trayvon Martin. We saw him get smeared in the most ridiculous ways ever. And for this to happen again, I mean, I personally do feel that there is more pushback this time towards the smear campaign. Like, people are really like, okay, really? Like, this is getting a little out of control. Like, this is not a deserved, you know, killing. But I think this is an opportunity that we should really take to defend him, like, as hard as possible. Because, I mean, to me, it's like, and I was actually arguing with someone on Facebook, which I try not to do, but I was just like, why is it so difficult to see your own, like, kids in this kid? Like, why is that so hard? Like, this could be your kid. You don't know what your kid does when he's out in the street by himself. You have no idea. He could be the bully at school. But does that make it, that mean that he should be dead? No, of course you wouldn't think that. I know, and it's ridiculous.
Themselves out of it when this is not a class issue. This is a race. Sadly, this is a race issue. This is about all black people, not the black people over there versus the black people over here.
Right.
This is about all Americans. It's not just about all black Americans. Yes, we are on the receiving. We're on the receiving end of the misjustice, but for a miscarriage of justice, but I'm really disturbed. Like, you know, any issue of injustice is an issue for me, like Native Americans, Asian. I can't stand black people who shit on Latinos because like they're new and like we don't have as much power. Like, really? Yeah, it's like right. crabs at the bottom of the barrel bullshit. Like, get the fuck out of here with that. Like, if you're shitting on anyone unjustifiably, gays, straights, Christians, although I don't fall into the category of like, you know, Christians are under attack in this country. I don't buy into it. But guess what? If I did, if I saw some people genuinely trying to prevent Christians from exercising their rights, I'd be like, look, it's their rights. Let them do it. Like, I don't know. I this should not be a black issue. And apparently, though, I will say Facebook is different. But I have a friend, my friend Christian was like, black Twitter is not happening. If you have something foolish to say about this, the Ferguson case on Twitter right now, black folks are jumping on and like are like jumping on and being like,
Twitter's been on. I'm not on Facebook. Twitter's been on. Yeah. My question, when all this goes down and, you know, I'm not on Facebook, I can put on there. But my question was, for all these black people, what is the more important thing for you? Is it fighting white supremacy, or is it fixing this battle, this inner race aggression we got? I'm like, what is more important to you? When you bring up this, well, black people commit all this crime against ourselves. I'm like, so what is more important to you? Is it the infighting, or is it the people outside of your house basically bombing your house? And like, whoever the hell is in your house, I don't really give a fuck. We don't like none of y'all. You know, like, what is it? You know, is it like, I don't get along with my sister, but, you know, you can't hit my sister. I'm not cool with that. You know, but I can punk my sister and hit her all I want. You know, like, what is it more important to you? I don't understand.
I don't think one would take precedence over the other. They both need to be addressed.
Well, in order for us to be in a better position, they do both need to be addressed.
If you're looking at the police situation, I think what Leisha said is what really hits home. There needs to be a systematic change there immediately. Mm-hmm. You know, because our problems are long-standing. Like, this isn't the infighting with black folks has been happening forever. Mm-hmm. And we still haven't been able to find any solutions in regards to how we deal with that. So that's a I mean.
That's a long.
That's post-traumatic slave disorder.
But even the fact that we're trying to find a solution for it among ourselves, as opposed to like white people aren't saying like we're trying to find a solution for infighting among us white people. I mean, the fact that we feel the need to like have a united front and address it goes to show the sense to which we suffer from our own box of racism that, you know, but I would say that it's easier to see I think it's easier to see an issue and an injustice when the face of it is the face of the quote unquote other. Mm-hmm. And so I do understand what people are grasping at when they mention, well, like, if we're going to be this vigilant about this, let's be this vigilant about that. It's just an opportunity to acknowledge, like, yeah, it's always easier to see injustice when the person perpetrating on the other side looks different from you.
Right. Right.
But, you know, we need to address both, and let's do both right here. This forum here is for this. You know, kick rocks if you want to talk.
And what about the mother and the child she cherished? The city's wild, up steps the wild child. Tension, anger, living in danger. What the fuck you gonna do in this situation? It's like you need to have still just to feel relaxation. Tons of guns.
We'd love to hear your thoughts on the subject. Hit us up, let us know what you're thinking. On Twitter at Black Is Online, on Facebook at Black Is Magazine, email us at kc@blackisonline.com, hit us up on the hotline at 323-455-4219, and check us out at www.blackisonline.com. Thanks for listening.
Tons of guns.